Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum. And on today's show, we have Greg Burns. He's the president of Deep Sea, and he's here to talk about something that's kind of really interesting to me, which is underwater data centers. Hey, Greg, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Aloha, Bert. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Greg, you know, you and I met as a result of the PAC conference, PACT being Pacific Alliance for Collaboration and Technology. This is something that, you know, Ian Kitajima and Keith Matsumoto, they put together featuring, you know, companies from Hawaii. And I guess the cohort is called Hawaii Wave. And you're one of the companies in that cohort. Maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, initially what your company does. Well, we'll get into what your company does, but, you know, I want to find out the role that you guys played in this cohort and how it's been. Is it still going on? Is it, you know, what has been the kind of the mm-hmm. result of being part of the first Hawaii Wave cohort?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We were actually really excited to be asked to be part of the cohort. We were introduced to Ian and Keith through a mutual friend. They were up to what we were, they were seeing what we were up to. And when they really had their first thought was to connect us with Ian and Keith, mm-hmm. it provided an opportunity for us to be part of this initial cohort that has these deep roots into Japan and the whole Asian region. It's been fantastic for us. I mean, Ian and Keith are great leaders. Our cohort members are some of the most intriguing companies here in Hawaii. It's fascinating to see what is coming out of the islands. And we're, like I said, just excited to be part of that. We're able to collaborate together here on island. But what I find to be really the most powerful outcome for us as a company is our abilities to now reach out over into Japan mm-hmm, and talk mm-hmm. to some of these Japanese companies that are doing some outstanding things over there and that complement what we're doing with our own technology. So it creates these really dynamic synergies for us that takes some really spectacular technology and allows us to utilize it and test it for our own systems. Mm-hmm. And so it's just it's mutually beneficial. And the cohort over there in Japan is JSTAR-X. And you already mentioned ours being Pictor here, but together at PACT, it was really a great opportunity for us to spend more time together and to share what we're up to, you know, a lot of the people such as yourself that were there for the conference.
Well, you know, I found it very interesting, and when these cohorts get put together, whether they're, you know, Japanese companies or the Hawaii companies, the main purpose in this particular context is to showcase these companies to partners that Pictor, which is what Keith and Ian are part of, Pictor, which is the Pacific Center for High Tech Research, and they bring together, I guess, many of the DOD, their DOD partners, right? And so the right. companies that are part of JSTAR-X and Hawaii Wave get to present and kind of get a feel for how their technologies might fit into that environment. And it's called dual use, right? So dual use
That's
where,
right.
you know, if it wasn't for maybe a DOD type of application, it might be more commercial. But Are there sort of variations of what it is that you deliver that could be more specifically solving, you know, a defense related type of application. And that's what's kind of interesting, because it's very different from some of the other accelerators that we talk about, you know, whether it's an, you know, like Elemental, which is more energy oriented, mm-hmm. and environmental oriented, and then you have the Blue Startups, which is much more kind of commercial oriented. And then so this one is definitely kind of geared toward that dual use environment. Now
that's right.
I'm glad you shared a little bit about, you know, that experience, and you're still, you know, sort of working through some of those relationships that you have. Now, just so that we can start to get a level set on what Deep Sea does, you know, my introduction to it was this concept of an underwater data center. How did you kind of get involved with something that it typically is kind of pretty radical, right? Because most of these data centers that I know of, they're on land. We're hearing a lot about these hyperscalers that are huge, right? Huge data centers.
Right.
But finding alternative environments for some of these data centers is a really interesting topic. And I kind of wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about how did you get to start up something like Deep Sea?
Well, my background initially, when I was much younger, I was fascinated by mechanical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first businesses that I was involved with was 3D printing. But this was 3D printing before anybody knew what 3D printing was. They thought we were referring to like three-dimensional renderings on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, you know, we were taking gypsum-based plaster and mixing it with a water-based binder that would print out of Hewlett-Packard printheads and print thousands and thousands of layers on top of each other. And by the time you're done, you'd pull out this piece like as an archaeological dig, and you would have an actual 3D part in your hand. But that was, you know, this was 3D printing in the very, very early 2000s.
Wow. So you actually created a 3D printer using an HP printer and kind of modifying what kind of substrate it actually delivered and printed?
So you could look at us almost like we were the, use an older antiquated term, but like the Kinko's of 3D printing back in the day. There was a company that was based out of Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
that had developed this technology. But the problem was that they didn't know how to get people to use their systems, because it became rather complicated to convert a three-dimensional file into a 3D print-ready file.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to step in. We did the conversion, which now, frankly, Bert, you can press three buttons and it does it for you.
Right,
but
right.
20 years ago, you had to have a team that would prepare these STL files.
Right, right.
So I was able to really learn software and mechanical engineering through that. And then I was able to jump into actually the real estate world and real estate development, construction management,
mm-hmm.
and was fascinated by that as well. And that just made me appreciate the value of real estate in general.
Okay.
Fast forward.
Okay, so we're at a real estate point now in your career, and you've, you know, sort of seen how to make some of these things with 3D printing, and then I kind of want to hear how you started to go down this path of computers and servers, and, you know, taking typically what would be on land and finding an environment like underwater to build a data center. So I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back after a short break to continue our conversation with Greg Burns, president of Deep Sea. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor The Hidden Nene.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Greg Burns. He's president, also co-founder of Deep Sea, and he's here to talk about underwater data centers. And Greg, so right before the break, you're talking about, you know, your kind of career trajectory getting into real estate. And so where does the real estate piece start to evolve into finding kind of like real estate for a data center?
Yeah, well, it's interesting how my careers in the past kind of came and realigned with this data processing center business we're in. Mm-hmm. But really what it was is when I was in the real estate industry, I would constantly be going to conferences on the mainland, and I was fascinated by what was happening and the latest trend. And this was more than a decade ago, but you start hearing the chatter of data processing centers. Mm-hmm. You start hearing, along with that, the amount of space, the amount of actual square footage it takes to process data.
Mm-hmm.
And then you dig more and more into that, and you realize a good portion of that real estate is just to cool the data processing centers themselves. Close to 60%, they say, of these actual buildings can be designated just to cooling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So this was constantly a kind of a topic of conversation, and it just became louder and louder and louder throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
And then leaning kind of back on my mechanical engineering and my love for just software in general, your brain starts to think, and it's like, well, there's an obvious problem there, and how can we fix it? And the problem was that the amount of real estate and energy that these buildings were starting to consume were impacting the actual grids or the communities that they were supplying data to.
Mm-hmm, right.
They were taking, water sources that would be otherwise utilized for communities. They needed it there. Energy sources that otherwise would go towards the community would be needed there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important for the community to have this data processing, but it comes at a big cost. And frankly, it's only getting more and more expensive every day because real estate doesn't get cheaper and energy does not get cheaper.
All right. All right. Okay.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you solve this problem?
So here we are. We're in Hawaii. I've been here over 20 years now. And one thing we have all around us is the ocean. And I know that being a waterman and love being in the ocean, that once you start going down below the surface, the temperature starts to cool down dramatically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you start realizing that it doesn't take much depth to get the water temperature to drop to a point where it's actually quite shocking how low the temperature can get just here off of our coast here in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was, okay, so now we're able to solve two problems with one solution here. I can take these data processing centers, and if I could just move them off the land and put them in an environment that has a self-cooling capability, then I accomplish really one of the main things is the amount of real estate that is required to process data now, if not diminishes, disappears entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, the amount of energy consumption to power these. Keep in mind, as we were saying earlier, a tremendous amount of the energy is used just to cool these units. We're able to mitigate that by water. And this doesn't have to be just ocean water. We could utilize reservoirs. We can utilize rivers. It's just the ability of the water itself to cool these units. So I could take what would once require a building, and I can shrink it down now into the size of about a 20-foot container.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm able to, yeah, and it's great because now we're able to put it either subsea, so off the ocean in the ocean floor, or we can put it in reservoirs or rivers if you're kind of in an environment that's not near a coastline.
Mm-hmm.
We still can accommodate their needs. And this kind of segues into so what's the need for these, right? Not only is it to shrink that real estate, like we're saying, is an important thing, as well as the energy. But these have become targets. And I'm not just talking on at the military level. We're talking for hackers and just other criminals out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the targets are really two main things that will be targeted during, let's call it, non-peaceful environment. And this goes kind of back to our dual-use capabilities with our systems, and mm-hmm. I'll touch on that just in a moment. But, you know, the traditional data centers are massive buildings that can be seen from space.
Mm-hmm.
So during non-peacetime environments, they're easy targets. And that goes for subsea cables as well. Cables themselves that stretch across the ocean that provide data and power are targets. We see this already in the news. So we're there to kind of help take things out, I shouldn't say offline, but gap them, so to speak, and make them more self-sufficient and reliant again.
Mm-hmm.
And what
mm-hmm.
I mean by that, like, again part, is there's this great story. It's actually Jeff Bezos recounts one time where he was in an old brewery in Germany,
mm-hmm.
ancient brewery, hundreds of years old. And he's walking through the museum part of it, and he's seen all these great, you know, historical facts about this brewery in particular. And almost like the centerpiece is this generator. And he's like, okay, what's so special about this generator? And so one of the gentlemen at the museum comes up and explains to him, like, this piece of technology is what allowed this brewery to continue to exist and expand to what we are now. This particular generator is what allowed us to do it. And Mr. Bezos had this kind of epiphany thought where, you know, it's similar to data, right? Data started when it came to processing and storing data. It started on your computer, and then it went to the cloud. And if you can look at the analogies here, like, your computer is kind of similar to that generator that Mr. Bezos saw there
mm-hmm.
at the brewery, right? But what happened with electricity? It started with these companies that would have their own individual generators, and they were able to generate their own power. They were able to generate business at a scale that they never thought they could do before. Then what happens is more and more of those start to come online. This idea comes up, well, why don't we just take everything and put it into one power generating unit or a power plant of sorts,
mm-hmm.
and then we create a network to distribute that power to. And that's where Jeff stopped the story. He was using that as an analogy of where our power grid is very much like our data processing centers are. And the point in where he really just kind of stops the conversation, but it does continue, is there's still this alignment of the story, because what you see with energy now is this kind of new emergence of self-reliant energy supply source for you as a consumer. And in other words, what I'm saying is, like, solar energy,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not reliant on this large mesh network anymore, because it has its vulnerabilities. We've seen it here in Hawaii. When the power goes down, you know, everything goes down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this goes back to data, but what's happening now with solar power, people have their own reliant systems. What is happening now in the data processing world is that companies and governments are becoming very aware that their data is very susceptible to be targeted for, you know, unfriendly purposes. Satellites, again, the moment we jump into kind of an unfriendly environment, satellites become practically useless, because they will be one of the first things to be targeted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
and so we're Oh, go ahead.
No. So, Greg, so when you've put these needs together and are now presenting a solution, I'm curious to hear the kind of reception or the traction that you're getting in solving some of these problems with an underwater data center. So what I do want to do is kind of have you talk about that, but we're going to hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Greg Burns, president of Deep Sea. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. And of course, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Greg Burns. He's the president of Deep Sea, and he's here to talk about these underwater data centers. And Greg, so you're getting to kind of the part of the story where there's a particular need that these designed underwater systems can address. But from a commercial standpoint, I'm not sure. Maybe you can describe, is there a commercial problem that you're trying to solve, or is there a particular, Department of Defense problem that you're trying to solve? And what is getting some traction so that you can get to the point of actually building something like this?
Well, so as a dual-use company, it was important for us to find customers on both sides, on the federal side as well as on the commercial side of things here. And one of the first audiences we went after, because frankly it's one of the easier ones, is the commercial side of things. Victor and being part of Hawaii Wave certainly helped expedite the other side of the dual-use needs for us. But to focus on the commercial side of things, some of the customers that we've been able to work with and have reached out to us and we're moving forward with installations are large institutes, research institutes. We have hospitals that are interested in what we're up to, even large corporations. The major draw for those commercial companies is to be able to have a more independent, self-reliant data processing center that they can utilize for themselves as a company and not share space in a much larger building. Mm-hmm. But since it is their own reliant system, they need to have an efficient way to be able to utilize it. So one of the least efficient ways would be for them to have to carve out a large piece of real estate anywhere on campus or anywhere on at their corporate headquarters to build up these large buildings. Mm-hmm. When in fact we can run these small cables to them and have these just offshore or in a reservoir or rivers nearby, and allow them that independence to be kind of use that energy reference, like not to be reliant on the grid anymore, to be able to have your own data processing center that you have control of, you are able to manage in a way that's much more efficient and cost effective. And because if you think about it, somebody's paying for all that real estate in that data processing center, right? And it's the users, it's everybody that's renting space on those racks. And so we've just developed a system that is a much more efficient, reliant data processing center for their commercial use. On the government side, on military applications, what we are able to provide is something that's extremely important. What we're able to do is create what we refer to as a water-gapped environment. Through our technology and technology that we're developing, we're able to transmit data in the ocean or any bed of water without ever having to rely on a satellite or rely on a subsea cable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this creates a very important data processing environment during non-peacetime environment.
Mm-hmm. And primarily
and
for
so
ship
that is,
for ship access, right?
This is correct. Ships and just, you know, other vehicles that are either above or below the sea.
Right, and so I'm curious. So you're presenting this solution to a problem. Where along the timeline are you? Are you able to get investors? Are you getting customers that are interested to the extent where you can actually put money into the building of some of these undersea data centers?
You know, we've been fortunate. We've spent a lot of time researching and creating partnerships, and you know, we like to look at ourselves as integrators. You know, part of our original intent was to develop something that wasn't going to require exotic development. In other words, we wanted to be able, for the most part, to build something from off-the-shelf technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, we've been successful with that. A lot of that has to do with some of the partnerships that we've been able to create, but you know, we're able to create our non-mobile units that are already at a TRL level 9, and we're working on stuff that adds mobility to our units, and that's, we're at a TRL 3 with that. But having our, what we call our home-based non-mobile units, gives us the opportunity to expand our services into that more mobile data processing environment.
Are you finding yourself able to headquarter here in Hawaii, or do you have to go elsewhere? And I think you started by saying Hawaii is an ideal place for this kind of model of a data center in, you know, basically in the water.
Truly, I mean, we're one of the best places on the planet to be able to develop this. We're in the United States. Mm-hmm. We're in a state that is 2,500 miles in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which is really our playground. And it's also our customers' playground as well. So the whole, you know, Indo-PACOM region, there's just a lot of area out there that is just so perfectly suited for our technology that being here in Hawaii, it's great. And not only that, there's a big move with some of our local politicians to try to bring industry back to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
And we, you know, and that's part of what Ian and Keith are doing. You know, that you have a lot of, you know, one of our congresswomen are, you know, actively trying to bring trade back here. And we want to be part of that story too. So, you know, we're thrilled to be able to be building this business here.
Well, Greg,
in
you
Hawaii.
Know,
and,
you know, I'm gonna definitely want to see, make a, you know, like a trip out and see when you are able to actually build something that is operational and servicing, you know, some of the customers that we talked about. Where can people find out more information about Deep Sea?
Please visit us at www.deepsea.systems.
Very good. I'll put that up on our show notes. Greg Burns is the president of Deep Sea, and I want to thank you, Greg, for joining me today.
Thanks, Bert.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the upcoming East Meets West Conference. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR1 every Friday or anytime via the HPR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, stay dry, and of course, stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.